from the land of the free and the home of the Chiefs. This is the Locked On Chiefs podcast.
All right, folks, I'm really excited and happy to let you know that we have been lucky enough to get the man himself back for another year, and hopefully this won't be the only time pre-draft, but we'll see if we can work it out. Matt Waldman from the RSP, you guys have seen it. You've seen it on the Twitter feed. You need to go check that out. You've heard Mark Schofield talk about it on here, too. So welcome, Matt. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing great, Ryan. It's always great to get a chance to talk about the Chiefs and just talk ball.
Super busy, right?
Oh, yeah. You know, putting another RSP together. So that's about a 300-page thing that I got to write in about a month. And I'm about halfway through the quarterback chapter right now. So, you know, it's a slog, but, you know, it's a labor of love, too.
Oh, well, I will not go quarterback on you. I guarantee you that.
as we have taken care of.
Yeah, you think maybe? So, but I will start there because having him and knowing that Sammy Watkins has had this injury thing forever, I am looking at ways if they can't get the defensive value that they want at 29. There's a number of players out there that a lot of people are talking up at skill positions on the offensive side to really kind of maximize what Pat has to work with. And the guy that I keep coming back to, we'll talk about the others here, but the guy that I keep coming back to, because positionally, I think you could stick him in the slot and I like what he could do from there, but he's got an injury himself. Tell me what your look at film on Marquise Brown has told you.
Yeah. I mean, I think with Brown, what's interesting about him is that he kind of reminds me of what, you know, Azahir Hakim was back in the day for St. Louis. And, you know, he's an electric player, but he's also someone that can do good work for you. I think, you know, in with some contested catches over the middle, at least in the area of being able to make plays in traffic. So I think he's a physical guy. He's certainly someone that can run good routes for you. I think he can deal with physical coverage. Certainly, you know, great explosion. You know, it's interesting to me that you think about him as an option for them. And I can understand certainly with a guy like, you know, with Sammy Watkins being banged up the way he was, that, you know, that you're looking for another element. But I think, well, with Tyreek Hill being that kind of explosive element as well, I wonder also if the Chiefs wouldn't be more interested in someone who's a little more physical and someone who can also do what Travis Kelce does in combination, which is not only just stretch the field and the regions that they run routes, but also be able to make some of the contested plays so that Mahomes can make some of those trust throws that maybe he wasn't, you know, that he didn't have the receiving core to be able to make that with, you know, completely across the board. I mean, you can do that to an extent with Hill for sure. But I mean, you know, a guy reminds me of Sammy Watkins in the regard that in this regard is Deebo Samuel. I just don't know if he'll be about.
He was the next guy I was going to ask you about. And, you know, you're right. There are some guys Pat still has to actually look at before he throws the ball. So Deebo, in terms of being inside, outside, can make the contested catches. Can he run away from people?
Yeah, I think he can. I mean, I think that if he can't flat out run away from people, he can run around them, run through them and do it multiple times within the same play. You know, he reminds me a lot of another guy who wasn't quite so fast, but he was a really good football player that was built a little bit like a running back in the way Deebo looks. And that's Sterling Sharp. And, the two players I have in the range of comparisons in terms of style for Deebo Samuel, not saying that he's as talented as these guys, is Sterling Sharp and Sammy Watkins. And I had him actually from a talent standpoint a little closer to Sammy Watkins. And I think, you know, when you look at a 4.48 40, that's pretty darn good. That's good enough. I mean, Marvin Jones is a very fine deep threat who ran a 4.48, and the 4.14 20 shuttle is pretty fast. I mean, that's starter caliber in my book in terms of what you're looking for in terms of that acceleration. So he can get off the line quick enough that he can create separation. If he makes a man, he makes a defender go in the wrong direction, you know, off the line, and he can get upfield, good luck trying to catch him at a 4.48. That just means he's going to basically hold off a cornerback if a cornerback's a step or two behind. You know, 4.3, 4.2 is more like, oh, you have a good angle on me and I'm going to run by you. But, you know, if you're at 4.5, 4.4, you know, high 4.4 or 4.5, you're going to be able to hold off defenders, you know, and trust me when I tell you, I mean, Deebo Samuel is, is a tackle breaker and a guy who makes people miss. He's a tackle breaker and an ankle breaker. And I think that that's something that, you know, that, that can work out very well, especially with Watkins, who just with that foot injury and the issues that he's had may just never get to be the player that, you know, a lot of people thought he'd be. And he was my top receiver in the draft class that he came out of because he was such a good player. And it's just a shame that he couldn't stay healthy. Mm.
Well, and he's got that change of direction as well. And like you said, he can run circles around people. And a couple of guys that, that I want to know more about, and obviously DK Metcalf is blowing everything up, but is more of a straight line runner. He doesn't have that change of direction like Debo. What's your take on Metcalf as a pure pass catcher? What can he do?
Well, I mean, he's a guy that basically is that monstrous outside presence who he can win in press coverage. He uses his hands pretty violently. He can oftentimes hit his first move and be able to get upfield and then track the ball over his shoulder and do well there. So if he catches a ball at the along the sideline and he's able to, you know, square up a defender, even if a defender, he doesn't square up a defender, he can have defenders bounce off of him and he's going to be able to take it to the house. It's kind of like what Terrell Pryor showed, you know, during that one season with the Browns where he really looked fantastic. I think that DK Metcalf is a little bit more Terrell Pryor like than he is Josh Gordon like. And I think that that's, you know, a lot of people are talking about him as kind of a Josh Gordon or someone who's a, you know, a really top end receiver. But the problem with Metcalf is that he doesn't really drop in and out of his breaks extremely well at this stage. And maybe he can get a little bit better about that. But he also doesn't use great hand position to catch the football. So he's going to have to work on that as well. And I think that what happens is that there's either lapses of concentration or he's just not as polished at the catch point as you'd like to see him. And it seems to me it's a little bit more about leaning on the athletic ability because I've seen plays with him where he goes up for fade routes and he just completely mistimes or misuses his hands. And then they'll throw to him later and he'll do it perfectly. So I think he can grow into being a more mature player and he can be in, you know, an excellent player in that regard. But at this stage of his game, I think the hype also talking about him as, you know, he ran a 4.33 40 at 6.4 225, which is fantastic. And that is impressive, but his 20 shuttle is below reserve grade. Like in terms of what you're looking for, and his three cone drill 3.738 is also below reserve grade for what you would expect from a wide receiver. And I'm not someone who's like bigger, faster, stronger, quicker is better all the time. For me, it is about the combine times really should just tell you, can they ride the ride in the NFL? And when you look at his speed, yeah, if you're going to have him go downfield and run through people and or use his hands well and use those violent hands to get past, yeah, he can do that. But if you're going to ask him to run dig routes or, you know, different types of routes in the middle of the field or timing routes where he's going to have to break back, you know, unless there was something going on that's mitigating why his numbers were so low in that regard, you know, what I saw on tape was a guy who did struggle with some of those types of routes. At worst, he might be kind of a one-note player, and at best, maybe he develops into a complete receiver.
So with that, we'll take a break, and we'll come back and talk about a receiver that is somebody that I've had my eye on for a bit. And folks, make sure you check out Rogue Analytics. That's rogueapc.com. I have the last year's draft guide up for a buck, so go check that out and see what you think. We want to say thank you for all of your support through this entire season and want to let you know we will be here all off season for you. This and every episode that we'll be bringing to you are going to be available every week, just like normal, all off season long. So thanks for taking the time. All of you new folks, thanks for leaving your iTunes reviews and everything else. We appreciate your time and keep it locked on, Chiefs. That brings me to another guy that I like his brother. I like what he did at Georgia, but I hear that he runs probably the best routes in this class, but he's just kind of nobody really wants to buy in. What's your take on Riley Ridley?
Yeah, I mean, it's funny because I feel like a guy who's kind of Switzerland in this particular, you know, in this particular argument. And usually I'm on one side or the other, but right now I've got him rated in my top 15. And this is before I kind of run the combine numbers and take one last look at some little areas that may be nagging me in terms of my evaluation about where they fit from one tier to the next. But he is a good route runner. I like how he levitates for the ball. And he reminds me kind of a slower Robert Woods, you know, someone who can do complete work for you in terms of his route running, because he is so sudden in and out of his breaks. And he's someone that understands how to set up his routes, and he has decent size. It's just, the thing is that when you look at Riley Ridley, when you look at 6'2", 200 pound receivers, they don't really excite anybody. You know, it's just like, that's a pedestrian kind of range for the position. So when it comes to the combine and when it comes to pre-draft and evaluation processes, what ends up happening is that the general public looks at players and they want to see something that leaps off the page to them. And usually with the average fan, what leaps off to the page to them is size, speed, strength, you know, and quickness, you know, and he's quick, but, you know, he's not like unbelievably quick. So he's pretty much kind of your average NFL talent in terms of athletic ability, and the nuance of his game is what stands out. But that nuance usually doesn't leap off the page for the average fan.
That brings me to probably the most interesting question, because imagine, if you will, that you're me and you are absolutely tired of seeing Julian Edelman do what he does, and you want to look for the next Wes Welker or somebody like that, so you can add that to Pat's kind of arsenal. In this particular class, is there anybody that you feel can actually do that kind of pivot route underneath type work and really make a difference?
Yeah, I think there are. And what's funny is my first answer, I'm just going to say this half jokingly, is Hakeem Butler of Iowa State. He's 6'6", 225, or 6'5", 225, 228, who ran whip routes against Iowa's fine cornerback tandem and actually forced them to have to tackle him so that he didn't break free and catch the ball and turn up the sideline and whip them down the sideline. So I would say, yeah, sure, you know, but my number one answer for any receiver might be Hakeem Butler, even though he has focus drops. I don't really care about that.
I was going to ask.
Yeah, I don't, because it's like, you know, think about it this way. Brandon Marshall had focus drops. Chad Johnson early in his career had focus drops. Terrell Owens had focus drops. As long as you're using your correct technique and you track the ball well, and the only issue is that you're just a little too excited to turn your head upfield to actually start running because you know people are going to bounce off of you, I'm not too worried about that. It's just a maturity issue, as opposed to somebody like, say, Quincy Enunwa, who was with Nebraska, who looked like he was doing interpretive dance when he was trying to catch a football, you know, and his hands would be all every which way. But other than, you know, the fact that Hakeem Butler is going to play an X, you know, play the X somewhere and not be a slot player. You know, a guy who's a little bit more realistic, if you're looking from that Edelman size standpoint, a guy I really like is Penny Hart. And I know that a lot of people are also fond of Andy Isabella. But, you know, Hart and Isabella are both interesting guys because they both have that really nice quickness. They know how to run routes and attack defenders in a way where it puts them on their toes with that top speed and with that acceleration early in the route. And they both are able to do that with strong movement. But I think that Penny Hart's game is a little bit more economical with that movement. Because, you know, oftentimes people get really enamored with guys who can do a lot of fakes, and you see these, you know, films on YouTube of, you know, players who are like running all these fancy routes where they're like doing 8 million moves to run a break. But, you know, when the actual game comes on, when you do that, well, the quarterback's been sacked by the time you got open doing that, you know. Braxton right. Miller impressed a lot of people at the Senior Bowl with that type of movement, and Braxton Miller couldn't get open, you know, for the Texans, and is no longer a factor. And so when you look at those two, Penny Hart's a guy who's a lot more economical than Andy Isabella is. He also strikes me as a guy who could be a little bit more than a slot receiver. He also handles physical coverage well. Nasir Adderley, who's a pretty physical safety, was covering him at the Senior Bowl and tried to like bully Penny Hart, and Penny Hart had none of it, you know. And so I really like that about his game. He's also a strong kick returner and very good after the catch. And he kind of puts whereas Isabella does a lot of that shake and bake kind of stuff, I kind of more like feel like Penny Hart makes defenders, you know, basically, you know, wet themselves basically at the moment he kind of comes off the line of scrimmage. He puts them on alert pretty quickly. And so he reminds me of a guy a little bit more where maybe he could be a John Brown or a D.D. Westbrook at his ceiling. where, you know, and I know a lot of people look at D.D. Westbrook and go, well, so what? He didn't do much in Jacksonville. But I guarantee you, if Baker Mayfield could have D.D. Westbrook in Cleveland, D.D. Westbrook would have been the leading receiver for the Browns. Because, I mean, Baker Mayfield used to just throw the ball up for grabs for D.D. Westbrook. I think Westbrook was better than any of the receivers that that's come out since, for Oklahoma since he left. And it's just that he's wasted and, you know, he's wasted on the Jaguars at this point.
So let me ask you this last guy. And then I swear, folks, we'll take a break and we'll talk about something other than receivers. I promise. The one guy that, like you said, I think he's a pretty exceptional athlete all the way around, but I'm really intrigued by his change of direction, his short area quickness skills at his size. And you tell me, when I look at Miles Boykin, I see a guy that can play outside, that can play in the slot, that could really be the same kind of jack of all trades that the Chiefs are really looking for.
Man, you would do yourself, the Chiefs would do themselves a favor to get Miles Boykin. And I'm going to, and it's so funny because first of all, Miles Boykin has been in my top five pretty much all year long, but I haven't really written anything about him. There's a guy, oftentimes I love to put out a lot of content about different players and not talk about the guys that I really love until later because it's fun, you know, it's kind of fun to spring that, but he's a guy that scored very well. And this is before I actually add in the combine totals. And when you talk about a guy who leaped a 43.5 vertical, also had a 6.773 cone. I mean, that's on the level of like Cooper Kupp and Allen Robinson, who are like extremely quick, who make their games in very different ways. And then that 407, you know, 20 shuttle along with a 4.42 40 at 228 pounds. He can drop his weight. He can run those routes you're looking for, but he can also dominate you at the catch point. And, you know, I didn't like this guy when he came out, the guy I'm going to compare him to. I didn't like this guy coming out because I didn't think he was all that. And Chiefs fans, I'm sure, understand that very clearly because it was John Baldwin. I think Miles Boykin can be what people hope John Baldwin would be. I think that he's that kind of guy that, you know, Patrick Mahomes would do really well to have a guy that, in addition to Tyreek Hill, he can throw the ball up on the sideline and say, go get it. Let's throw some fade routes. But in addition to that, he's not just a fade route guy. And so, you know, Boykin to me looks like that type of player who could easily wind up being one of the best of the bunch of a very strong class.
Wow. Folks, we're going to take a break. That's the wide receivers, at least where they stand right now. We'll come right back and we'll talk a couple other interesting people.
We have a powerful new feed to tell you about. Check out Locked On NFL Net on Twitter. It is all the inside information from our hosts for all the Locked On shows for all of the NFL teams in one Twitter feed. That's LockedOnNFL.net on Twitter. Check that out today.
Okay, I had to get a break in there. Otherwise, we'll do this far too long. But the most common, especially with this new draft tool that the Draft Network has put out, every Chiefs fan I know has done like 17 million mock drafts at this point. And the offensive player that seems to drop to them the most and the guy that they are most interested in, I have to ask the question first because people will kill me if I don't. The Iowa tight ends. Is there a difference outside of blocking? And do you feel that they're first round talents?
Yes and no. And the answer is that, yes, there is a difference. And I think no, one of them is not a first round talent. And that's the more popular guy, Noah Fant. Noah Fant is a very athletic guy, but he fights the football. And one of the things that wasn't talked about, you know, I'm not a huge proponent of some of the combine drills, because my take on this is that the combine drills are basically, the purpose of them is to segment off what you would see in the, if you were to combine everything in total for a football game, but to make it a safe version of what you would watch in football. And so that you can isolate each area in segments, but the unintended consequence of doing these drills separately and segmenting things off and making them drills is that now you have to, now each of these drills has an added element of something that a player has to learn in order to, master the drill well that has nothing to do with football, or it's very artificial. And like that gauntlet to me, as many times as people argue with me to rationalize it, is while it's very good at being able to show you some hand-eye coordination, the types of throws that they're going to get are limited in terms of the types of targets they're going to face. They know that it's basically scripted, so they know when they're coming, how they're coming. No one's hitting them. There's no route running. There's no thinking about what part of the zone they're going to settle in. There's no area where they're going to think about where they're going to turn and run next. No thought process about that is realistic about football other than reaching up and putting your hands up to catch the ball. You know, when I look at that, though, when you look at the tape, Noah Fant has often struggled to catch the ball in terms of using the correct hands position, getting the body position he needs to. And it showed up a little bit on tape on an easier situation, which is the gauntlet. So no one's really talked about that, but that's an issue. But that aside, he's a terrific athlete. He's a competent blocker, even though the guy who's really the top tight end in this class, if you ask me, is his contemporary TJ Hockenson. I mean, this guy, I mean, he actually even performed better than I thought in the athletic drills in terms of the testing. I mean, I thought a 4.70 is about where I thought he'd be in the 40, but I didn't really care about that. I was more, you know, I mean, Rob Gronkowski ran, I think, a slower 40 than that, but it's that 20 shuttle, a 4.18 20 shuttle. That's pretty electric for a tight end, and then 7.02 three cone drill on top of that, along with the vertical that he had and the broad jump. Those were pretty good times. And he's very good at positioning himself to win the football. And he's someone that has excellent hands and good tracking ability. And then on top of it, he's skilled after the catch in terms of being able to break tackles and bounce off players. He's not the next Rob Gronkowski. I don't even know if I'd say he's the next George Kittle, even though I think he's within that comparison range because he's such a good blocker. But he reminds me of another guy who was in Gronkowski's class, and that's a healthy version of Dennis Pitta. And when Dennis Pitta was a healthy player, he was a borderline all pro player. Very good in the red zone, someone who could really block for you, quite versatile, good in the middle of the field, and, you know, a player that Joe Flacco would trust with trust throws, you know, with those tight coverage types of plays. And Hockenson would be an excellent compliment if they're going to go two tight ends. But it would be a pretty high price compliment when, in fact, there's a number of guys in this class who I think that could do the job for you and compliment, Travis Kelce.
You know, and I'm glad that you brought up complimenting him and not necessarily doing the same thing he does, but let me ask you about another couple of guys that I thought showed me something. And like you were talking about the change of direction skills, that's pretty unique for Hockenson, but he's not necessarily alone. The kid out at LSU, Foster Moreau, has some of that change of direction quality as well. What do you think of him as an actual pass catcher?
I think your suggestion, what you're getting at there, suggesting him as a compliment for the Chiefs, and I think it's a perfect fit. And he's a good pass catcher. He's someone who's fluid. He can post up on people. He can win the ball in the air and turn and catch the ball and make the adjustments up the seam. He showed that pretty well in drills at the Senior Bowl in ways that you didn't always get a chance for him to get those opportunities at LSU. And he's a nasty player. I mean, he is a hard-nosed, nasty player. He kind of has a little bit of that Bill Laimbeer, you know, Detroit Pistons kind of attitude about blocking. And I think that that's something that's always nice to have. And that's what you really want, is you want a tight end who can threaten the seam, but can play well enough in line that you can put Travis Kelce outside or be able to put them both on in line together. But at the same time, you don't know who's going to be the guy that's going to go out for a pass there. So Moreau has steadily risen, you know, really in the eyes, I think, of our draft community as a whole, because a lot of people talked about how he was a good athlete and he was underused at LSU. And then he had a strong Senior Bowl and he looked very fluid. But then when you got to see actually how he ran, because no one really gauges speed all that well, unless it just jumps off the page in a significant fashion, unless you're looking at like you know, Chris Johnson, you know, or Tyreek Hill, then you can go, oh, that guy's super fast. But other guy, big guys, it's a little harder to see. So when you see that he ran the way he did, it's easier to match up and gauge how that fluid ability isn't just that he's smooth. He's also quick.
Now, there's two guys that I don't know that I would call them either smooth or quick. A little disappointed in Nada out of Georgia and Sternberger out of Texas A&M, but it might have made a little bit of room for a guy that I find intriguing, and I'm just not sure what to think about him. So tell me your take on Josh Oliver.
Josh Oliver, yeah. So, you know, I've watched a little bit of Josh Oliver at this point, but he hasn't really stood out to me as a versatile player. He strikes me a little bit more as an athletic guy who certainly can catch the football, but he still kind of strikes me more as a big receiver than he does as a guy that you want as a blocker. Now, he could improve over time and really fill out there, but I think there are better players in this draft who can give you that blocking element that you're looking for and then also still catch the ball. You know, I'm a big fan of guys like Trevon Wesco. I think Dawson Knox is someone that was, you know, a lot of people will say, well, he was so good of an athlete, but, you know, how come he didn't get a lot of balls? Well, you know, DeMarcus Lodge, AJ Brown and DK Metcalf. How about that? You know, I mean, so, but Dawson Knox can catch the football and he also has that quickness that you're looking for. And he's someone that, I think is one of the better blockers in this class. I mean, that's one thing that really stood out is that they could use him as an H-back, as a fullback, as an inline tight end on the wing, and he thrived there. And then another guy I really like who isn't particularly fast, but he's someone that is he's fluid. He's the definition of fluid, is West Virginia's Trevon Wesco, a former quarterback who came to the college football at about 6'4", 200 pounds. And he basically came to West Virginia this year as a 274 pound mammoth who can block, who, like Dana Holgorsen, the former head coach of West Virginia, he would talk about him during the year and say, listen, when I mention him, he's part of the offensive line. He's not a tight end. When I talk about blocking, he's part of our offensive line. I could go on and on about how good his blocking is. That's what Dana Holgorsen said. And then the fact is, and this was a former quarterback. So the fact that he embraced it that well, and it does show up on tape and his ability to move people. And he's not just some backside blocker who people run away from, you know, that they're running away from. And he's just handling the backside of a play. He can be your front side guy, play fullback, play wing back. So you've got the versatility there. And he catches the ball well, and he can make people miss and run through people in the open field. So he may not stretch the field or be anything nearly as dynamic as Kelsey is, because you could look at like a Dawson Knox and say, wow, he can do some of the stuff Travis Kelsey could do, you know, or Hockenson and say he could do some of the stuff that Kelsey can do. But Wesco, you're going to look at and say, oh, well, we can put him in the flat and he's going to run somebody over from the eight yard line and score, you know, but he's not going to stretch the field 35 yards down the way, though he might catch a pass, break a tackle or two and gain 20 yards, but it's a different game. And on top of that, you don't need that if what you're trying to do is open holes for your running back and also protect your passer.
Oh, I like the sound of that. Before I let you go, let me ask you one more question. Of this tight end class, because I think it's a position the Chiefs really need to look at TE2. Of the people we haven't talked about, who's your guy that you think fits best in Kansas City?
You know, it's funny. I mean, I think Knox is that guy because it allows, you know, Spencer Ware's likely gone. It would be nice to have kind of a fullback like player who can do a little bit for you, but also be able to split outside. And you're looking for multiple players who can be multiple. And while Hockenson and Smith are really good in that regard, and if you could get either of those, they top the list. But if you can wait a little bit later, a guy like Knox really fits there. And I will want to mention one other guy that just for Chiefs fans as a wide receiver. I know we talked about them already, but I want to talk about another guy who's last name is Butler, who maybe you can get at really late in the draft or as an undrafted free agent, is Emmanuel Butler out of Northern Arizona.
He's the other one.
The other one. He is, I've been thinking about him since last year. This guy is 6'3", 220, and he goes up and wins the ball as well as anyone I've seen in recent years. Now he played at Northern Arizona, so you think, well, you know, who's he really faced in terms of competition? But he did some of that against the likes of Arizona State and Arizona when they went up a tier to play a tougher competition. And he reminded me kind of in a way, you know, not talent wise, but in some ways he reminded me of the way Larry Fitzgerald played football. You know, he's really tough at being able to go up and win the ball. He can win in double coverage. They've thrown to him in triple coverage and he's nearly come down with the ball. And, you know, and I'm not talking like Hail Marys. I'm talking like, you know, fade routes from the end zone. And it's like, they know it's coming to him and he's still almost getting it. And he's quick enough. I mean, he ran a 4.22 20, which is pretty darn good. It's better than say JJ, you know, JJ Arcega-Whiteside, I believe, or Antoine Wesley, or Riley Ridley, you know, was on par with Hunter Renfro, you know, in terms of quickness. And then he had a 36-inch vertical leap and he's 220 pounds. So he's a guy that when I watch him, it's almost like there's a magnet for the ball and he's got him in his gloves. And he's like, and the ball just magically appears in his hand in certain situations that you just wouldn't think are quite possible. And he's been kind of high on my board for a while. And the fact that he showed up reasonably well in the drills that he ran at the combine, he could be one of those late round steal types.
Well, now I got to go watch film on him. Folks, I think you should too. But before you do that, you got to check out Waldman, Matt Waldman, RSP, all one word, .com, right?
That's right.
Wow, I did that right for once. I love that. The Twitter handle is?
At Matt Waldman. Simple enough.
Man, it's like I should remember this stuff. Folks, if you're not listening and reading and ingesting everything that Matt and Mark do, you're doing it wrong. So I'll just tell you that now. Matt, thank you for all of your time and all of your insight. I really appreciate it.
Hey, Ryan, it's an absolute pleasure. And go Chiefs.
And folks, we'll talk to you tomorrow.
Subscribe to the show on iTunes or Google Play. Follow the show on Twitter at Locked On Chiefs. Check out my work at RGR Football on YouTube, Chris's work on LockedOnChiefs.com, and all of Seth's film analysis at TheAthletic.com. Thanks for listening.